shoes make me really tall. The audience would kind of hide me a little bit, but we're all right. I just mind. There. All right. We're good to go. Hi, everybody. I'm Brenda. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 6/28/91. 96. My daughter's birthday. I got sober on my daughter's birthday, and that was the day she was born, so I always confuse it. So, and my home group meets on Thursday nights and Tuesdays at noon, and it's Squirming Women. So, and I see lots of them here to support me, so thank you. I have a habit of starting anytime I have to speak or do anything by saying a little prayer for myself, just to kind of calm me. So I'm going to do that, if you'll all just kind of bear with me. Well, it's a set-aside prayer, so if you know that, you can all join me. It's just one that I chose tonight to say, just to kind of calm me down. So, God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you. So, I didn't think I'd be nervous up here, but I actually got a little bit of shakes going on. So I'm supposed to share with you a little bit of what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. I think the best way for me to do that is I'm just going to kind of start with the steps. Step one says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. For me, that took a long time because my life really wasn't unmanageable. When I started out, I was, you know, partying in school, hanging out with the gang. I was a cheerleader. I was going to school. I was on the honor roll. It wasn't really causing me any trouble. At least none that I could see at that point. You know, I was just hanging out with the group, having a good time, having some fun. Didn't really have a lot of consequences that I noticed. I got kicked off the cheerleading squad for drinking and smoking. But I didn't notice those things as I was doing school. Those just seemed like normal things that would happen to anybody that's in high school. And I just said, I'm done anyways. I'm sick of being a cheerleader. That's really a goody-two-shoe thing. I don't want to be that anymore. So I never looked at how that, you know, really started that early. I really didn't see that it was already starting to happen to me. You know, I was lying to my parents, sneaking out. I thought all kids snuck out. You know, I don't know if everybody snuck out of their doors and went and hung out with men way older than me, getting alcohol. I mean, that just all seems so normal to me. And when I look at it now, I go, wow, that really probably isn't a normal thing that happens. I was always hanging out with people older than me because they could always have access to alcohol. You know, at the time, I just thought I was cool. I'm hanging out with older people, you know. I wanted to date older people. It took me quite a while. I didn't get sober till, you know, well, I thought it was old. You know, I was in my 30s when I first started trying to get sober. And, you know, I went off to college, thought this is fabulous. I'm going to be a great, you know, I'm going to go be a CPA, which I'm not a CPA, but I'm still doing what I went to school for. But, you know, I got over there in college and things just kind of went awry. I really started partying a lot, drinking, and again, I just thought that's what college students do. That's what you do, you know, but all that stuff that starts to happen, lying to my parents, needing more money, calling them up, saying I need books, you know, all that stuff, and spending all that money, you know, that's when I started experimenting with a little more drugs, you know, those got a little more expensive. And so I was starting to be sneaky. I worked in a bar, and I was really good at it. I was a good waitress, I was making good tips, but I wasn't making enough, I didn't think, so I started stealing by padding tickets, not putting them in the till. Things like that that I really did not even realize I was doing until you start doing these steps. You know, and a lot of people think that's not unmanageable, but But when you start adding all of that up and then your inside starts feeling icky and you start feeling, you know, that guilt and remorse and, you know, those are signs that it's becoming unmanageable. And then there's just more progression. You know, you just start not caring. I had an excuse. I came home. Oh, God, my boyfriend's, you know, sleeping with somebody else. I must come home. But really, I was failing in school. I was not pulling my weight. I was not going to school. My parents were footing the bill. And I was just over there taking advantage of all of that, you know, and just telling him it was hard. You know, it was hard, and you know, now I'm working, and it's just too much, you know. And I, you know, in that, you know, chaos I love to create, I called my mom in the middle of the night, tried to have her come pick me up, you know, race into a ferry, distraught over my relationship, and you know, all that drama that creates. And so here I was back in swim again. You know, just doing the same thing I always do. You know, I had a job. I always seemed to be able to keep a job. You know, I always looked pretty good on the outside. You know, most people thought I had it together. You know, but again, got a job. I start stealing from my boss. Because by then, you know, my little additive habit was getting very expensive. You know, I never drank without adding some other substance with that. And it was outside of my means. I couldn't afford it. So, you know, I'm always running the front office. So I'm the one collecting the money. I'm the one putting in the invoices, and I'm the one stealing. You know, and it's not little bits of money. I mean, we're talking considerable amounts of money when I go back and had to do this step back here and really own up to how much money I stole from my employers because they trusted me. I looked good, I knew how to deal with money, and they let me handle it. And I was very good at taking it away from them and going out and spending it on drugs and alcohol and justifying it, saying they owed me. They owed me, they don't pay me enough. I work hard, they owe me. And I would steal, from them. You know, I was drinking, I got married my high school sweetheart. We met in driver's ed. You know, and we spent a lot of time fighting, partying, getting back together, breaking up, doing all that stuff we do. You know, I got pregnant, wasn't married, so we better get married, because that's what good Christian girls do, and that's what my mom and dad wanted me to do. So we got married, I was 5 months pregnant, and you know, that's what you do. And I'm drinking and partying, and to be honest, I was using a lot when I didn't know I was pregnant. And so I spent, you know, about 7 months wondering if I was going to have a child that was maybe deformed, because I was doing some really nasty stuff and didn't know. And I was sleeping and stepping out on my husband, so I was also not sure if he was going to be the father. So. So, you know, those are the kind of things that happen, you know, and I'm supposed to be a good girl, you know, and nobody knows that this is all going on in my head or this is the reality of what's going on. They all believe, you know, they don't know that I'm thinking all these things, and they don't know that I'm, you know, I'm worried. Luckily, my son came out and he wasn't deformed. I do believe he has some side effects of that. But nothing that's apparent, you know. He's, you know, I don't know what fetal alcohol syndrome is, but he's definitely got some things that I would probably attribute to his early life in my body. So that's kind of a little bit about how things get unmanageable, and they just kind of keep going and going. But I can keep justifying them, and you know, putting them out of my head until. You know, they just got to where I couldn't handle it anymore. You know, I'm drinking almost every day. I'm not going to my job or finding reasons not to go to my job. I'm stepping out. You know, I don't have enough money, and my other habits and my drinking were kind of getting out of hand. And I could always find a guy that really wanted to take me out, and I would do that. And I wouldn't think anything of it because I always said my husband was an ass and he didn't treat me as well as I deserved, and he was probably doing the same thing. So again, I could justify my behavior, and I just continued to do that. My final straw was I was stepping out on my husband. and I got busted. You know, he found me at another man's house, he broke out his window, I hid, he didn't actually find me there, but I knew that was the end. I knew that I could not continue to go home and pretend on the outside and smile and say my life is okay, because it was a disaster. We were fighting, my kids, I had kids at home, it was not within what I believed I needed to be, who I thought I was. I mean, I wasn't anything I thought I should be. I wasn't a good mom, I wasn't a good wife, I wasn't a good employee, and I was telling myself I was good at all of those things, and nobody was giving me credit for it. And that was the truth. That is what seemed like the truth to me, and it wasn't. It wasn't reality. So I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started going to some meetings, and I thought, oh, this is my salvation. Oh my God, I found home. And I got really into the program, got a sponsor right off the bat, and life was good. My parents were happy, my husband was happy, I was being a good mom, and I quit going to meetings. And I quit calling my sponsor, and I thought life was grand. And I had this, and I was about 2 years sober, and I wanted to fit in with my husband. He was still drinking. So I started going back to our old hangout, our bar, and I started drinking Diet Pepsi, and I started playing some pool, and I started doing all that stuff. And then I decided, well, that old drug I used to do, I could probably do that and not drink. And I did that for about 5 months, and it wasn't, I needed alcohol. Alcohol was kind of the thing that made that all fun. And so I started drinking again, and I was out there for about 3 more years before I got back in here. You know, a lot of people go a day or a couple days, and I didn't. I went out, and I went right back where I was, and it was pretty ugly when I got back in here. But I did. My life was still unmanageable, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, that's the hope part of it. And, you know, I didn't really believe I was insane. I just thought that I, you know, needed to figure out how to drink. I really didn't look at that behavior. I hadn't even really looked at that behavior, because you're not there. You know, you're not there yet. So I came in and I believed what everybody was telling me, and I was ready to follow some directions. I had had a God in my life before, so that really wasn't too hard to accept. You know, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him, I didn't really know what that looked like. I mean, I think I had a willingness to turn my life over. I think I wanted somebody else to be in charge, because I was so messed up. It was like, oh God, really, how does that happen? And I really thought that was going to be some magical, if I just say it, I'm like, something's going to happen. I'm just going to feel this, and all these decisions are just going to come, and I'm going to know. I'm going to know how to do this. I'm going to know how to do life. And that is not what happened. Things got worse. I was uncomfortable. I was miserable. I felt like I was a failure with my children. I thought I'd damn, you know, I mean, I was just a mess. I was a mess when I, you know, got a little bit of clean and my body started getting some clarity. And thank God when I got in here, I got a sponsor. Because, you know, that sponsor is helping me, telling me that that's what's going to happen to you. This is normal, and this is what you do, and you go to meetings, and you don't drink in between, and you get a support group, and you call people on this list. Well, hell no, I'm not calling people on that list. I don't even know these people. I'm not going to be calling, you know. It's really hard to follow directions. I swear I knew everything, and you guys couldn't tell me anything. And so, you know, it takes a while. It's taken me a long time. I've got a few years, and I still have a hard time making a phone call. I don't know what that's about. I go to lots of meetings, so I get to talk to lots of people on a one-on-one. But, you know, I will call my sponsor when things get tough and I know I'm falling apart. I will give her a call. So made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. As I shared with you, all those things that I was telling you about were what were revealed when I was doing that moral inventory. When I came in here, I didn't know any of those things about myself. I didn't see any of those things. You couldn't have told me I was doing those things. You could not have told me I was a bad mom, a bad employee, and a bad wife. I was awesome at all of those things when I got here. And everybody else was messed up and screwed up, and they just didn't see how where I was. So this step was super important to me. And I love, I have little marks in here because I shared on this step in a previous retreat that I went to. Because it seems so daunting, you know, I'm supposed to write all my, you know, my fears and people and all of that just seems like a lot. And, you know, when I have a sponsor who knows how to go through this book, she broke it down and I only had to do it in little pieces. I did not have to do this all at once. I got a starting place and I got a direction and I followed that direction and I got to go through that piece of it. And then I got to add another piece on it. I got to list the people. Then I got to list what those people did to me. And that's easy because everybody did me wrong. Everybody did me wrong. There was no problem writing all of that stuff down. I was able to write all these things about everybody else. The part that was a little more difficult was to go through and look at what that affected, you know, how it affected my self-esteem and my pride and my pocketbook and my sex and my relationships and all of that stuff. But when I could start digging in there and seeing who I was in that stuff, wow, you know, I mean, I love that these steps go in order. And, you know, 1, 2, and 3 are just finding that place of God and just, you know, really figuring out that I'm an alcoholic and reading these chapters and really seeing what that means and where do I fit in and how do I look like that. I mean, when you read this book and I'm going, these words don't fit, they're all kind of old-fashioned, but going that one-on-one and having somebody show how I fit, where do I fit in here? You know, what pertains to me? I don't have to swallow it all. I have to just find where I am. And once you can do that, then you can sit down and you can start doing this stuff. And, you know, looking at that pride and the ego and starting to take away what those people did to me and look at how I put myself in a position to be hurt or to be whatever happened there was a huge revelation for me to see that I played a part in everything that happened in my life. Not everything was my fault. People did me wrong and there's some wrong things that happened, but I still played a part in all of that by either allowing it or putting myself there or, you know, making choices that were wrong. So I did that step. I wrote all this stuff down. I went through it. I looked at it, what it affected. I did all that stuff. And then it was to go share it with somebody. You know, today it sounded pretty easy for me to share all that stuff I shared with you guys. In the beginning, to tell people all those things I did was not easy. I did not want anybody to know that I was a thief and I was a slut. And I was all those things, you know, and that I was a bad mom and that I drove around drunk with my kids. I didn't want anybody to know those things about me. What a horrible thing to tell somebody. And this step's telling me I gotta go share that with somebody. Somebody I don't really, well, if you've done steps 1 through 4, you've gotten to know that person pretty well and you should feel pretty comfortable. If I didn't feel comfortable, then I'm probably not with the right sponsor and I probably need to find somebody else if I'm looking for somebody else to do my fifth step with. My opinion only, but you know, I want to be with a person that's going to know everything about me, not just pieces of me. So the woman that I got to share that fifth step with, I felt that comfortable with, and I could share all of those intimate details, and she got to share those things and bits and pieces of herself with me, which just cemented that relationship a little bit more and let me know that I was okay. She wasn't judging me, and you know, she did things like that too. And I think that's when I really felt this fellowship, you know, come around, that I could be a part of this fellowship. And I didn't judge you anymore, and I didn't judge me anymore, and I could just come in here because we were all in here for a common purpose, and that was recovery and to get sober. So I think that fifth step was really where I got to see that part of it and get that, you know, I'm okay with me. And to let go of some of that guilt and the shame and all of that stuff that you carry around and you hide and you want to drink over, you want to eat over, you want to gamble, whatever you want to do. And some of that stuff has happened because once I take away the alcohol, I still have all those feelings. And I've had to work through some of that other stuff too. I shop too much, I eat too much, I gamble too much, you know, but it was I smoked too much. I you know, I don't smoke anymore, so I don't get to go out and smoke anymore. But, you know, it's just like, you know, people say peeling that onion. So this was just peeling those layers. You know, and then we go to step six, and you know, again, I got to see my character defects. Some of them I thought were useful and helpful, and some of them are. I believe that. I believe that, you know, today I believe that God takes them away when He's ready, not when I'm ready. And so I still have some of those things. I still have some of my character defects because I don't think I'm supposed to be done with them yet. But I am willing. I mean, I really am willing to have them taken away whenever that's supposed to happen. And, you know, I still do things, and maybe that's because somebody's going to learn from me by my stupid mistakes or my character defects. So let's see, we're on seven. I've lost my place. There we go. Humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings. Meeting I go to on Thursday nights, we say the third step in the seventh step prayer. We say the seventh step prayer at the end of the meeting. And I love that. I love that part of it, that I get to really ask for that to be, you know, to happen. And you know, I used to just say those words, and now I really can feel them when I'm speaking them. And I do want my shortcomings removed. And I don't even know what they are sometimes. You know, I think a lot of the ones I had when I came in here are gone. I think I got a lot of new ones. I think along the journey I've gotten new shortcomings that, you know, so it's kind of, what I love about this is it's a process, and it's a journey that we get to go through. And more is revealed every time. I've learned more in the last 5 years than I think I learned in the first 10 years. About myself, and that was just because I became more willing, I became more interested in what this program had to offer, and I wanted to go after what it had to give me instead of looking at what it took from me. It takes a lot of time to go to meetings, you gotta work with other people, I gotta call a sponsor, oh my God, you gotta show up. You know, that's how it kind of felt like a job, and now it doesn't feel like a job to me. It feels like a privilege to me to be able to come to meetings and to do some of the things that I do. So I enjoy that I'm finding that I have more shortcomings and that I get rid of some character defects and they come back, or I create new ones because I'm a human being. And that's life, you know, and I get into new relationships, so new things come about. So I'm never going to be rid of everything. I think that's probably part of the joy of this program. If I was perfect, I'd have nothing to share with you. I wouldn't, and I wouldn't fit in here. It just wouldn't work. So I think that's kind of what the ebb and flow of the program is. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, that was done in our fourth step. You know, I made a pretty thorough list. I did add some people after my fourth step because there were things in there that I didn't write, or I wasn't angry or something about these people, but I still owed them some amends. You know, I wasn't angry at my mom and dad. I really wasn't, but I owed them some huge amends. So that part seemed kind of easy as well. You know, that work was done. Getting to step nine, where you got to go make those amends, a little more difficult. I rested on my laurels really for like the first 12 years of my program. I felt like my living amends were enough. I felt that I behave differently, I'm acting differently, and I really felt that the people in my immediate family got to see and get all the great results of that. Boy, they all benefited, and I didn't really need to make any amends to those people, because look at how great I was. I show up on time now, I don't steal your money, I'm always available. That should be enough. I changed my sponsor in my 12th year. And we went back through these steps, and I had to do a little differently the second time. I had to do some written amends, and I had to actually go back and write down. From my fourth step, I didn't throw away. I went back to my fourth step, and I wrote down a lot of the things that I felt they had done me wrong. And as I'd gone through that fourth step, I'd written about some of my parts and my selfishness and my dishonesty and all of that stuff. And I got to write my letters from that, and I got to go to them and tell them you know, that I was wrong and I behaved poorly and I didn't just get to say I was sorry. I had to be some pretty specific about some of my actions and some of my behaviors. And again, I told my sponsor that stuff. So I kind of thought we were done with bringing that stuff up and sharing with people what we did. Not so, you know, I didn't share everything, but I did have to share a lot of the, you know, I had to tell my parents I stole from them, you know. God, I'm their little girl, and I was stealing out of your petty cash when I worked for you. And, you know, and of course the parents were the easy ones because they go, oh, that's okay, honey, God, look at where you're at today. So those are a good place to start because they're not so difficult, and they're, you know, they're not. I'm in the midst of my husband, and I was pretty straightforward. I admitted how wrong and how bad I made him look, and I really went into a lot of detail there, and I really expected something back, and I got nothing. And I was pissed. I walked around going, "Will you?" Yeah, I was not very happy about that. Again, I had an expectation. I really wasn't giving these amends in the sincerity it was meant. I was doing it because I wanted something from those people. I wanted to look good. I wanted them to praise me. I was not doing it in the spirit of what it was intended. At least I wasn't. I really had some big expectations about getting all this glorified, oh, yay. And, you know, my husband went, well, it's about damn time, and he didn't even say that. You know, I mean, he deserved that amends, and he knew it. And he didn't have to say anything about it, because it was deserving. So, you know, and I had to let that go. I had to go to my sponsor and tell her how pissed off I was. And I'm not doing these stupid amends anymore. You know, that's bullshit. If I'm going to go to all this work and pour out my heart to these people, they damn well better appreciate it, you know? Well, again, that's character defect. And one of my, you know, I want those kudos and those pats on the back. So, I'm still working on some of those amends. I did an amends to my son, and he didn't want me to give it to him. You know, I did the work, and I was willing, and I was available, and, you know, maybe someday we'll get to go through that amends. And I don't know if that's about me or about him. I have an amends for my brother. You know, I don't know that he wants to. I think it's scary for the people we're giving the amends to. They have no idea what we're doing, even if you try and tell them. You know, because some people feel they owe us amends back. And I think that they have a little bit of fear about what it is we might be bringing to the table when we do that. At least that's what I found. And you know, in some cases, yeah, those people do owe me amends. So I believe that's a part of it with my son. He doesn't feel I owe him an amends because we've had some stuff go on and he feels he owes me more than I owe him. And I don't believe that's true. But, you know, he's in this program as well, and he's going to hopefully someday get this opportunity and get to see what that's about for himself. So again, I'm still trudging through that list because, you know, now I got to go to the people that I really are just friends that I don't really aren't in my life a lot anymore, but they're still around, and I do owe them, you know, I owe them the respect that they deserve for owning up to my bad behavior, whether they know it or not. So. I'm willing to do the process, but I will tell you I'm dragging my feet and I got a lot of other stuff going on in my life, and it's the last thing I want to sit down and do is write a letter to somebody I never see anymore. I don't have contact with them, they're not in my life circle. I really would assume just let that die. But I know that that is not what this book tells us to do. You know, so again, that's part of that being willing. Continue to take personal inventory when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. I try and do that on a regular basis today. You know, it's taken me a long time to work through the steps, and I think that's why it's a process. Today I can own up to people. I mean, I can do it pretty quickly. My stomach will start turning. I know when I'm acting wrong. I know when I'm doing bad behavior today. I know when I've been short with somebody, even with my mom. You know, I have a busy life. I have a busy job right now. I'm super busy with work. I was like tonight going, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Don't you know I have a busy life? Well, I have a busy life because I got sober and I own my own business and I have lots of things in my life. I would not have had any of that stuff if I did not work this program and don't continue to work it. It can slip away at any moment. So I, you know, I call my mom up and I say, you know, I'm sorry, I was a little short with you on the phone earlier. You know, what did you need? And you deserve more of my attention. You know, I can stop and do that today. It's not always about me. Most of the time, it really still is about me. It's a hard thing not to be consumed with what's going on in my own world. You know, my things seem important and immediate, and I want my needs. I always, you know, I'm always looking for what I can do for me. And I've really been working on what I can do for other people. And you know, some days it's good and some days it's not so good. And that's okay. See, I don't beat myself up today about that anymore. I don't have to carry around that guilt. I just have to say I can change my mind anytime during the day. Anytime. I do not have to let the whole day go bad. I don't have to let my attitude be crappy. Today I can really stop and pause and change how my day is going to go. And which I did when I came in here, because I will be honest, I was not very happy when I came in here. I was tired, I was busy, and I was not in a very good mood. But I got to turn off my radio, because a guy used to tell me that's no longer with us, and he would turn off his radio jack, and he would just be quiet and use that time to drive and meditate. And I did that. I turned off my radio, and I said a prayer, and I asked God to just let me be humble and help me do this. And you know what? I'm not nervous anymore, and I'm totally okay, and life is good. So, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. I think I do that. Here's the thing. I'm always still wanting to look good. I'm wanting it to do either better than you or the best, because I'm always in competition. It's the truth. I'm in competition. I'm really looking at that today. I've been exercising and doing all this stuff. And I want to be in competition, or somebody's doing it better, and it's like, oh God, it's still there. It's still there. So I hear people talk about their prayer and their meditation and their quiet time, and they do this and they do that, and mine doesn't look like that. That's not what mine looks like. I want it to look like that because I think that's the right way it should look. Maybe that's not the right way it looks for me. I meditate a lot when I am walking, I'm exercising, I'm jogging. I meditate 4 or 5 or 6 times a day. I will stop and I can say a prayer. I've started to be okay with that. Would I like to improve that and expand on that? Absolutely. I would. And I would. I just think that spending more time quietly is good for me, but I am a pretty ramped up person on a regular basis. And, you know, if I can get 5 to 10 minutes quiet, I'm doing good, because when I started out, I had an 8 timer for 2 minutes, and I couldn't even do that. So it was like I'm itching at 1, going, so, you know, it's progress. I love that. I don't have to be perfect, and I'm not going to do it like you, and your higher power doesn't look like mine, and I got to quit comparing myself with you on a regular basis. I got to start comparing myself with my higher power, and am I moving in the direction that I think my higher power wants me to go on a regular basis? That is really what my goal is, and I got to quit worrying about if you think I'm moving in the right direction or if it looks like you think I should look. And that's been really hard for me, because that look good has been one of my saving graces. If I look good on the outside, then everything's okay. And I have to just kind of let that go. You know, I don't get to do that. And my most favorite step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Today I can say that I do that. I've done that by doing service. I've done that by working and sponsoring other alcoholics. I do that by going to meetings. I do that by standing up here and sharing. I get to say that I do that. I do that today. Sometimes I do it well, and sometimes I don't do it well. Sometimes I do it as a real good participant, and sometimes I gripe and complain and moan about it a lot. But that's okay, because I was told many times, act as if. You know, act as if in those things. Act your way into a different way of thinking. And that works. It really works. I don't have to like it. You know, my husband and I have some situations in our life, and I'm a little more able to be accepting than he is. And he says, you know, I can accept it. I don't have to like it. And that's the truth. There's things that I have to accept today, and I don't have to like it, and I don't have to agree with it, but I still have to act as if, and I have to have good behavior in some of those things, and I don't get to be a brat, stop my feet, just because I don't like it, try and change your mind and make you think the way I think. And I try to do that with my husband a lot of times. I want to change his mind. My idea is right, and yours is wrong. And you should be thinking the way I'm thinking, and if we do that, everything would be okay. You know, I'm learning that we're both going to be okay thinking the way we're thinking. I have to give him room. I saw a therapist for quite a while when I first got sober, and we call tune-ups. I go in and get tune-ups every so often when I start just sliding out a little bit. She was telling me that it's okay to let him have his warts, and it's okay for him to let me have mine too. You know, I can look at people today and go, you know, we're all different, and we all carry our own burdens differently, and I got to quit judging you for how you carry yours, and I hope that you'll give me the grace to not judge me for how I carry mine. So, anyways, I think that's about all I have to share. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with my heart and my soul. I've never met a fellowship that I feel so... just so welcome. I mean, I go to North Dakota and see my husband now, and I'm sponsoring somebody in North Dakota. I'm going to meetings in North Dakota. You know, you can go anywhere in this program, and you can share, and you can be shared with. And you can always learn something about how this program can help you or how you can help it. And I just ask and pray that I'm open and willing and available to do that. So thank you very much. Okay, let's have another round of applause. Before we close, I'm going to ask you to, one more time, somebody please, or some of you please help us clean up after the meeting.